As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's the little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Terms or restrictions apply.
This is the Athletic Football Show.
The Athletic Football Show is presented by State Farm. Because like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Get a quote today. Welcome to the Athletic Football Show. Today's Friday, October 22nd. I'm Robert Mays. Fun show for you guys today. Shil Kapadi is going to be joining us a little bit later for our weekly picks segment that includes Nate wearing rubber dog mask the entire time, which never a sentence I thought I would utter. When you agreed to do this show with me last year in like August of 2020, did you ever think that this would be your fate?
No. I didn't even think. I was like, the fact that we was like, oh, we're doing more than one show, like doing a weekly show, and then on top of that, it's like, oh, so, oh, we're doing picks now? Oh, great. Shields confident? Great. And then it was like, oh, yeah, what can happen? I hit my first lukewarm lock. It's like, what's the worst that can happen? I'm going to hit all of these. Like, this is my lock. That's why I'm giving it to you. And it's like second one, just a first quarter, one quarter in. I was already like, oh, no.
If the people in charge of this company ever start listening to this podcast, we are seriously screwed.
Seeing the spirit tape on it, that was amazing. Seeing the box, the spirit box.
I didn't tell you it was coming. So I, as soon as they were losing, I bought the mask, the dog. So the Browns were your lukewarm walk for people who are not on this here. So obviously the Browns famously have a group of fans that wear dog masks. So I was like, all right, this is easy. This one's right in front of me. So I was searching the internet, found one from the Spirit Halloween store, and like overnighted it to you and did not tell you it was coming.
No.
So you got a package on Wednesday from me, and that's what it was. It was just a rubber dog mask that you did not know was hitting your
mail. First thing I saw was Spirit Halloween tape, and I was like, oh, did my wife order us like Halloween outfits? Like that I don't remember we were talking about. And all of a sudden I saw it, I was like, oh, you got to be kidding me.
I appreciate you. All right. As we do every single Friday, we are doing the Friday Five. We pick five players, matchups, games that we wanted to dig into. Not a great week, if we're being honest with each other. I mean, obviously, some of the biggest lines that you're going to see in Week 7, we talked about that a little bit during the pick segment. We got two touchdown favorites this week. I mean, there are a lot of lopsided games, decent amount of teams on bye. You know, Buffalo's not playing, the Cowboys aren't playing, and it's left us with a lot to be desired when it comes to the schedule. So we're going to dig more into some individual players and units today than more big picture games like we might on a typical Sunday. We're going to start with Derrick Henry playing against the Kansas City Chiefs, a game we get to in our pick segment. But we talked about Derrick Henry a tiny bit with Lindsay yesterday, more just from a spectacle perspective. You know, just what the fact that this guy is doing what he's doing on this sort of volume is pretty crazy. But we wanted to dig into that a little bit deeper. Just look at some of the raw numbers. In a 16-game season, he'd be on pace for 2,088 yards. I don't know what we're going to do with that. Like, if he rushes for 2,200 yards in 17 games, I feel like that's a complication that we haven't wrestled with yet.
Are we going to do the Roger Maris asterisk thing? Like, you know, 61 and 61.
So for purposes of context here, I'm still leaning into 16 games. Looking at the numbers right now, in a 16-game season, he would be on pace for 2,088 rushing yards. So 2,000 yards again and 28 rushing touchdowns.
That's ridiculous. That is insane. And that's just rushing. That's what's even crazier. It's like you hear those old LT numbers, Thomason numbers, and it's like those were total touchdowns. Just 28 rushing is ridiculous.
We'll talk a little bit just about some of the ways they're using him, the nuts and bolts of their running game, some of the concepts that they're using, just to get an idea of why he's been effective outside of Derrick Henry is an alien, which might be the answer, but it seems like it's worth exploring. So when you went back and you watched either the Bills game or some of the other more recent games that they've played, what about their running game jumped out to you?
Yeah, it really is a little bit of, oh, Henry. And then the thing about Derrick Henry is it's kind of an all or nothing running back. It's either to get the maximum effectiveness out of him. It's kind of like you have to build the whole offense around him, and for better or for worse. And you kind of just do, but you get more out of it if you do build more around him. But then it's
why do you say that?
Because like one we've noted is that that was pre-show we talked about it, but they're running more out of the gun. He's limited out of gun runs. He's just a long-legged guy, so there's only certain run concepts that he's really good at. Like, you know, it's an all or nothing kind of thing. That's why the zone stuff and the duo stuff works, because he can get his long legs going. And also, it's just so if you can't take away the gun runs, okay, that makes us very telling. Our tendencies are high. Okay, we're in the shotgun, we're passing. Oh, we're under center, we're running. So okay, that's already one thing. He also is actually limited in pass protection as well. Mentally, I mean, physically, he's there. I think I've seen at least two or three busts in just the three games I just watched before the show, and it's like that crops up a lot. So it's like you're scared to run pass protection with him. He's not a great route runner. His hand-eye coordination is really weird. He's like the most limited great athlete I've ever seen. Like he is like unbelievable. He's a freak of nature, but then he like can't catch. And it's like,
it looks like he's trying to catch a beach ball. It is really, really funny.
It's just, and it's just, I mean, he'll like trip over himself, like trying to catch stuff. And it's like, what are you as a person? Like, it's just so crazy because he is a freak of freaks. So it's kind of, you have to build all in on that. But when you do, and you can, it kind of stinks that their defense is poor, because if they had a good defense, it's like, this would be the way to win football games right here. Just control the clock and beat you up in the run game. But they don't. But having said that,
I mean, like they play at a super slow pace too, I want to say. I mean, they've run one of, I think they're 30th in the NFL in total plays from scrimmage on offense this year.
That sounds about right. They don't use a lot of tempo. They're trying to, you know, they're trying to get you. They hit the explosive plays because Henry has that incredible long speed. But like, okay, so the long TD with Henry's long TD on Monday night. This is kind of like when you lean into it. If you're truly just going to build the offense around Derrick Henry, then you can just go, okay, so what are our run concepts that we want to hit? Okay, if those are the run concepts that we want to hit, how do we get the defense in the best look? How do we manipulate them so our advantages are greater than what they can do on defense? And the long, long TD, great run by Henry, great blocking by the line and the receivers on that play as well. But just the pre-snap stuff that they did before, it kind of sums up what this Titans offense does for the run game. They started in a 3-by-1. It was under center. Started in a 3-by-1 with the tight end all the way outside. Motion him inside, and it creates a bunch. A bunch set right to the right side. Then they just slow motioned Julio over. So it wasn't a jet motion, just slow motioned him over. So now it's a 2-by-2. And what that did was you're changing the passing strength. So now Tremaine Edmonds switched sides, the linebacker for the Bills, and also the Bills rock and rolled, that's the term, it's the official term actually, rock and rolled their safeties from one side to the other. And so like the guy that was in the box went to the post, and the other one went from the post to the box.
Which is a quiet, important part of jet motion. It's actually one of the reasons that teams started using it so much, because it gives you that information and you can dictate the game in that way.
You can get the guys that you want in the spots you want. Yeah. You're as opposed to just those are X's, you're putting the certain X's that have pluses on them or minuses on them to the spots you want them at.
And well, when you think about jet motion, right, it's obviously snappable. The eye candy of having to deal with it as a linebacker, but at the same time, it's a way to help create explosive runs by putting those guys in the places that you want to.
Yes.
I mean, that's just – and coaches, like the Packers, for example, we'll talk about them in a little bit. They're so good at hunting explosive runs because they understand how to pull those little strings on defenses. Like, if we do this, you're bringing this guy into this space that we want you to. It's just, I want to be explicit about that, because that's something when I started seeing the amount of jet motion that was becoming more popular in the league, I didn't understand that aspect of it before coaches explained it to me.
It's just that quick number count change, when especially there's all these rules these guys have to fit. And a defensive front, there's the gap safety, the A gap, B gap, C gap. You'll hear that. You'll hear a guy say, oh, he hit the A gap. A gap's in between the guards and the centers, and then it goes outwards. And then B, C, and you get to D and even E. They have to be a gap sound. A defense is taught to have a defender in each gap, in a basic defense. So if you're manipulating all this stuff, you motion these guys, jet motion especially, and one guy's wrong on defense, then that 3-yard gain turns into a 30-yard gain. Because especially if you have a fast running back or good blocking and one guy misses a tackle, there's no help. You're putting guys on islands in the run game as opposed to passing attack doing that. And that's zone offenses can really do that. But it's kind of fun watching this Titans offense kind of sprinkle in a couple other runs in there. Like, they'll run a little counter. They'll run, like, against the Seahawks, they ran pin pull, and then they ran wind back, you know, taking advantage of Jamal Adams knifing in. And that's what they kind of do. They set you up, and maybe those 2-yard runs, 1-yard runs where Derrick Henry's tripping over himself or a guy misses a block. As the game goes on, his size and his strength and his speed and what they do, it's easier for an offensive line to go forward than backwards. So the whole team has like more stamina in the fourth quarter. And all of a sudden it's not a perfect block on these zone blocks. The guy's edgy. Maybe the guard's not winning all the way, getting his head across. Derrick Henry's so big, he just runs through defenders' arm tackles.
Yeah.
And that's the advantage that he brings. We think of these athletic freaks as being jukey or setting up the blocks and stuff. He just runs through them. It's just like battering. He's the juggernaut, and he just goes through it. And that's the advantage that he brings. It's kind of cool watching a team in 2021 just build around a running back and then also just have the explosive stuff in the pass game with it.
And it's funny, because in that game against Buffalo, early in the game, I think even their first run play, they were in the gun and they ran a little pitch to him outside to approximate a wide zone type of run. Yep. It went for nothing, and they tried to run a couple zone plays wide to get him on the edge during that game. It just wasn't working. Like, Buffalo plays so fast defensively, and they play with more light boxes than most teams in the NFL. Do you think they have the second lightest box in the league consistently right
makes
now?
Sense.
And so over the course of that game, the Titans essentially said, well, fine, if you're going to play like this, we're going to just run downhill at you.
Yeah, here comes Duo.
The long touchdown that they scored was just Duo. It was just downhill. And I think them hitting more quick-hitting downhill runs against that team was the right move. And I think that takes me to a larger conversation I want to have about the Titans offense right now. Because, like you said, Derrick Henry is your best player, especially with the time that Julio Jones and A.J. Brown have missed.
Yes.
We have seen a version of this offense that is ultra-efficient when they are running the ball downhill with Derrick Henry and they are running play action off of it. It seems like they came into this season being like, you know what? We need to be more than that. And they've made some tweaks to it, which I think, as a general philosophy, is smart. You don't want to do the same things you've always done. So what have we seen from them in that vein? They've gone to way more shotgun, especially on early downs. So last year, they were 31.5% shotgun on first and second down. This year, it's 40%.
Okay.
Which is a big jump. It's almost 9 percentage points over the first 6 games of the year. Last season, they ran 48 running plays to Derrick Henry out of shotgun. This year, they've run 26 already. So they're trying to keep teams off balance and to say, all right, well, even if we're in the gun, we're not throwing the ball all the time. And I think that is, as a result of that, you've seen a downtick in their play action percentage. Because if you're playing out of the shotgun as often as they are, they're just running more dropback stuff than they would typical play action stuff, which is not the strength of this offense. So I feel like they've kind of made these tweaks to find a new version of themselves, and not all of them are catching. And I just, every time I see something that looks like the version we saw last year, whether it's, all right, you know, in breaking routes off play action, downhill runs under center, it's like, just spam the good stuff. just spam the good stuff.
Yeah, and it was kind of funny, too, because I especially against the Bills, it was like, oh, I see what they're doing. They're trying to do some gun runs. I'm sure they're trying to tendency break and sprinkle some stuff of that in there. And then it was like, as soon as they went under center again, they started running the ball, and it was like, ah, there it is. There it is. It's like seeing a band, man. They play the new album, and you're like, Okay, yeah, okay.
It's exactly how I feel about it. It's exactly how I feel about it.
And then they play the hit, and you're like, yeah, there we go.
It's like, I understand that you want to grow creatively here. That's not why I'm here. Like, that's not why I spent the money.
That's exactly it. And it was like, no, you got a great guitarist. Let him go. Like, just let him play. I know you want to be a complete band, but just let the guitarist shred.
The other notable stat that I saw that I thought was interesting, they are much, much better this year running out of 11 personnel than they are in heavy personnel.
I'm glad you said that. Okay.
So there, and so last year they've mixed it up, and they, we'll talk about this with the Packers too, just kind of the difference of running out of 21 versus 12. So they run a lot of heavy personnel. We know that about the Titans. But so far this year, Derrick Henry is averaging 2.86 yards per carry out of 21. And when they were running just lead zone early in that Bills game, it just doesn't look good.
It's just like it doesn't.
And you're not helping yourself.
It looks tight. It looks
yes, yes.
Yeah, it looks wedged up.
So, and then with two tight ends on the field this year, it's negative 0.018 EPA per rush. With a, out of 11 personnel, it's positive 0.087. Point one is like. That's very huge. Yeah. So if we're running plays, so when they've spread teams out, they've actually been more successful this year. So we talked about this with Doug Peterson on Wednesday show. This is the time of year for figuring out what you're good at.
Yes.
Like, hopefully you just get to this place. And that's why I'm kind of bullish on this Titans offense overall, is that they can get healthy and kind of be like, all right, we've tried this stuff and we've seen if we could evolve a little bit, but this is just the best version of what we are. And we get maybe into some in a world where they're running more 11 personnel because with Julio and AJ or with Julio and AJ and not having Jonnu Smith and all of that stuff, they're not built like the teams they were the last couple years.
Yeah.
You just want to throw like Swaim out there with the three receivers and run more downhill under center runs and use play action off of it. That feels like the type of recipe that might work for the way that this team is constructed in 2021.
When you go that spread to run. It's just they have to honor Julio and AJ Brown. You just have
totally.
To. You have to. Defense coordinators just won't. They can't sleep at night if they go like, oh, we're gonna load the box and single them up. So if you spread to run, they had a great rep of. I'm so glad you said that stat because I had some. I said more mix of personnels, especially 11 personnel, and I had a couple runs and they were both 11 personnel. They had a outside zone one, second and long, and it was just like you could tell the Bills defense was like, oh, pass 11 personnel. They're at second and long, extra long, second and 10. Oh, man, they're passing here or screen. Soft box, 11 personnel, boom. Derrick Henry had a huge gap for the outside zone, playing his foot and got north. And then they were running power out of 11 personnel. And actually, tight end was doing a good job blocking out. I was actually shocked.
Explain power.
Power is just pulling the guard towards the tight end. It is your classic football play. If usually old school, you'd see it with a fullback. Now you see power more out of single back power. And
we'll talk about it here in a second with Green Bay.
Yeah, and more... And duo, what's funny is duo is power without the puller. And so you'll see more NFL offense go with that as a substitute to get that type of run and at you run. But I think what the Bills were trying to do with the off-ball linebackers is really like influence the linebackers, get them pulling. And it was funny, the last play of the first half, they went to the gun, ran power out of it, went for like a 6 or 7 yard gain. Get the ball in the second half, first play, under center, 11 personnel. Same look, but it was under center as opposed to gun. Same formation, same motion, everything. Flash the power, hit an in-breaker right over the top of it. And you can see both of the Bills linebackers just bury themselves on it. But it's like that's pulling the guard is what influences linebackers more than anything. I mean, it's just like they can't help themselves. And
just shut up and play the hits. Shut up and play the hits.
Right? Just right? Just play them. Just play it.
So how do you think this, I mean, again, a run game that even if we feel like they could make a couple tweaks and just improve even on what they've done, they're fifth in rushing DVOA. I mean, they're still going to be a good running team with how they've committed to it and with Derrick Henry back there. How does that translate to this week against Kansas City? I think pretty well.
Yeah. Yeah, they. I think they're going to hit a couple. I think a team that wants to blitz you and run light boxes and light personnel, I think this is the perfect matchup for a Titans offense that wants to do the exact opposite and everything at you and make you bury yourself. So I think that's the advantage that they're going to have. And I know we're going to get into it in the pick segment with this, but also with the passing game from the Titans. If you want to do the play action stuff and you do catch them in a protection, that is a gash or be gash situation. So it's really going to be, can Tannehill can hit a couple of those against the Chiefs? Because I mean, that's how it is every week. But they are going to get after them in the run game. I think it's that perfect matchup for them.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this? A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.
All right, speaking of a team with a varied, effective run game, I wanted to talk about the Packers offense because we have not talked about them almost at all over the first 5 or 6 weeks of the season just because they're a team we're used to. You know, this is a group with Matt LaFleur, with Rodgers, not a ton of personnel changes for the most part. They've been dinged up on the offensive line, but the usual suspects. And I feel like we've kind of
including Randall Cobb. That's what's so funny.
Yeah, right?
The personnel changes is Randall Cobb coming back.
But I think still worth discussing because they're still a really good offense and still a very interesting offense. And some of the tweaks that they've made for this version of it, I wanted to dig into. Just overarching stats here before we dig into that. Fifth in offensive DVOA, which is just mindlessly good. They continue to be mindlessly good. They have played, so they're seventh in EPA per play. According to Football Outsiders, though, they have played the toughest schedule of opposing defenses in the NFL so far. So the fact that they have been not spectacular, but still very good, I think is indicative of which direction this arrow was pointed for them.
Yeah, very good with O-line woes, too. Like, understated O-line woes. Like, nah, that's whatever. Like, just it's just like, we can take a 3-4 clean sacks, and it doesn't matter. We'll still put up points on you.
And but just surviving with having to play your third left tackle at times, a bunch of rookies on the interior, and rookie guards. Their ability to kind of maintain and sustain through this is just an indication of how good they are, how well coached they are.
Yeah.
One of the things I want to dig into, just in big picture changes that they've made, LaFleur said this week, not a surprise. They've gone to much more empty this year.
Yep.
And one of the reasons that they had gone to a little bit more empty is something we talked about kind of indirectly as it relates to the Rams earlier this year and just a lot of other teams. When you go with some of those empty sets and you have a slot receiver or a tight end right next to the line, it allows you to influence or chip opposing pass rushers. So it's counterintuitive. Some teams, when they spread you out, it's harder to protect an empty. The Packers, because of how condensed things can get, when they go empty, it's actually to help their pass protection.
Yes.
So far this year, they've used empty on like 13% of all of their snaps. Last year, it was only 91 snaps the entire season. So they've been going to it more often as a way to protect themselves and as a little wrinkle for their offense, which that when you can be accomplishing two things at once, that's always a good thing.
We've talked about the spread to pass for Lamar, like showing it shows the blitzes, and that's out 2x2, not even empty. When you're going empty, it just, even now, just for the quarterback, Rodgers is getting the Packers O-line right. Like, he communicates with them a lot, but it just like cleans up stuff for them. If you play in these mugged up defenses that want to have a linebacker cover number three sprinting out to the flat from the A gap, like just standing up there. But if I go empty, then it's like, you really going to do that? Okay, and then you got Rodgers, who's a freaking football genius. So he's going to just look at it, and it's like he can take a gimme, but those gimmies turn into 20-yard gains because it's just wide open, guys. It's not it's when we say gash or be gash, he is like fully gash. he's not just taking hot throws and doing it. And it was kind of funny a couple times even because the Bears D-line was getting after him a little bit. They were in empty on one, and he just brought Aaron Jones back in to chip. And it was just a slant to Davante Adams, but he was like, I love this matchup I have right now. He's like, just get back in here. I just need you to chip real quick. And you can see Aaron Jones looking back going like, really? Like, this, do you actually want me to help here? And he's like, yeah, just chip him. Like, you can just see him talking, just do it. And then he snaps the ball and throws a slant, Davante Adams first down. You know, it's like, when you have 17 and 12, when you have Aaron Rodgers and Davante Adams cooking like that, it's just, if he gets the ball out in time, it's so hard to stop for a full game. I would say the one thing that they hit with those O-line woes, because the run game is still getting after it a little bit, is some of those play action shot plays, some of those movement stuff where they move the pocket, it's getting a little edgy. So Rodgers isn't feeling comfortable like launching into him. So I think some of those explosive plays haven't happened how they have before, when everything was coming up, and then they just hit you over the top. So
he actually has one of the lowest catchable ball percentages on deep throws in the league this season. I think he's like bottom two or three in the NFL. They're throwing the ball deep still.
Yes.
But they have not been hitting them. So I think that's exactly right. Like, that element of their offense is not in sync right now.
And it's talking about, not counterintuitive, but it kind of makes sense. It's like, okay, if the O-line gets healthy, then they can hit those shots. And then it's like, if they're doing this, would you say they were an EPA? Top 10 EPA with this seventh with this O-line against that schedule? Okay, now that they can start hitting explosive plays, like the quote-unquote easier explosive plays that are actually like, you know, half field reads for Rodgers, it's like, holy crap, like they're going to take a whole nother leap. And that's what we expect out of this offense.
Have you seen anything from their passing game that is drastically different from what we've kind of come to expect from them under LaFleur? Some of the empty stuff?
I think it's just that because of that empty, they cranked up the quick game, and which is fine, which is totally fine.
Greatest quick game quarterback in the history of football.
When you have a trigger man that can do what he does, it's like, yeah, you're fine with it. That's what's so funny. We knock some offenses, oh, they're in empty all the time, blah, blah, blah. They're putting on it. But it's like when you have a trigger man like a Dak or an Aaron Rodgers, it's like, yeah. Do it, because they're going to make you right all the time. That's great.
So I want to talk about the run game a little bit, because their run game is so fun to watch. Because we talked about how they use motion at times to kind of set up these explosive runs, but this is a staff. You can just – it's beyond the staff. Yeah. Watching their run game, it is such a reminder of what it looks like when you have a run game with buy-in from every single person. Every single guy on the staff is sitting there just hunting out runs. It's like, all right, if we did this and if we pull this guy and we actually do it from this formation and maybe we bring Lazard in and we insert him here, you can just tell they are just coming up with as many ideas in the run game as they possibly can, and it's really cool to watch, and it translates to the players.
Yeah.
Alan Lazard wants to block.
I was going to say.
Everybody on that offense wants to block. There is total organizational buy-in in what our running game wants to look like, and you can see that translated in every aspect of how they run the ball.
And it's fun watching Mercedes Lewis bury guys on the edge.
He's the perfect example.
It's like when your role players are doing that, when they're actively affecting plays, not just one play where it's like, oh, cool, he was the hero there, but like 15 plays a game, you're positively affecting the game. That just unlocks so much. Not just Mercedes Lewis, just every type of player. But I do you think Alan Lazard, where is he on the podium or top five for blocking receivers? Because I think he's climbed up there for me. Like, you know, it's like, you know, he's getting up there with Godwin, Zach Pascal. Like, you know, he's climbing up there with as far as like blocking receivers.
Well, what I loved is during that game against the Bears, he inserted on a couple duo runs the same way we see Godwin do all the time. And then they rewarded him by doing pretty much the exact same sort of look, but they threw a shovel pass to him.
Yeah.
So he inserts and he catches a shovel pass for a touchdown. He also, there was one play during that game where they sliced him across the formation and they had him seal the backside on a play action pass.
He's like a tight end.
Like he was a tight end.
Yep. It's great. Hey, we've seen the Rams use their guys, like use their two receivers. Hey, trust me, like the Bucs can get away with so much because they can just use Godwin like that. It's like, hey, go run every route in the route tree, and it also blocks safeties and linebackers. Like, not just get in the way, but like effectively move them and go to the right guy. Really, it's just going more than half the battle is just going to the right guy, because a lot of receivers, it's just their job. I get it. They're wide receivers. They're receiving the ball. They're worried about the passing game so much. Then the run game, they're like, yeah, I got it. Block the safety. How many times now you see linebackers with single digit numbers or like teen numbers now, and the receiver starts blocking them because they're like, oh, that's a safety. They just turn their brains off. Look for it more. Like, it happens more often than not now. It's pretty funny to watch, especially against the Patriots who have the single-digit linebackers. But I noticed that. But it's this run game, especially how varied they are, it's almost like a Cowboys a little bit, where they're 12 personnel.
Yes.
And they just run everything. They just run every type of run concept you could think of.
Well, it's interesting because last year they ran more 21 than they have this year. Yeah. This year they've been more 12. They have the third highest number of 12 personnel snaps in the entire NFL. And it's really second because Miami shouldn't count. Because Miami's 12 personnel snaps, Gesicki's a receiver. Yeah, so it's really just the Cowboys are ahead of them. And then then the Green Bay's. The Packers are number two. So what
it's the best
run
type
they've
of
been
offenses,
going to,
guys. It's the best types of offenses. Run 12 and run hip. It's the best. I'm telling you.
So what they've done is, so last year, my buddy Bobby Peters, who if you don't follow him on Twitter, he does a great job. He writes a manual or two about offenses every single season. Last year he did the Packers manual. Right. So I texted him today and I was like, how much counter and power did the Packers run last year? Because for the most part, their running game was comprised last season of duo. And inside-outside zone. And the duo stuff they had done for years, you know, back to the McCarthy era, and I think that they were comfortable with it. So they folded more of that in than you would typically think from a Shanahan tree type of offense. So last year, though, they only ran power or counter, I think, 19 times.
Really?
Over the course of the entire season. And a lot of their power was out of 21. They would have a fullback in the game. They'd run 21 two-back power.
Yeah.
This year, especially against the Bears last week, they were in 12, and they would run power with a speed motion from Deguara, number 81, and he'd come and lead up.
Yep.
So it's just a little tweak, right? You're playing against an odd front team where you want to get those angles.
Yes.
And you are running a power play. You run with two backs with two tight ends. Yep. And so they ran it several times, but I think four or five times in that game. AJ Dillon's big run that he had was on that exact type of play.
Yep.
Later in the game, they run a keeper bootleg off of it, and they pitch it to Mercedes Lewis for a nice chunk game.
Rodgers holds the fake for about 15 minutes.
But that's when we talk about offenses that are fun to watch or interesting. You have an offense that is folding in a new type of run play that they didn't use a lot last year. They're adding one more wrinkle off of it by running out of a different personnel grouping than they did last year. And then they're taking it one step further by tying in a play-action concept to that new run play that they're using.
The best.
That's why the Packers are good, and that's why the Packers are interesting, combined with them having better players than everybody else.
Yeah, and a quarterback that knows where to go with the ball. That always helps, too. But that's exactly what it is. When you wrinkle the wrinkles, that's when it's like, oh, now we're cooking, baby. Because you just keep the defenses guessing. When you put the wrinkles on the wrinkles, you just keep those defenses just guessing. And that's the thing, is when you already have an advantage with personnel and now you have an advantage mental-wise or just game plan-wise, it's just like those 1% advantages turn into 5% advantages that you can just spam over and over and over.
And guess what? David Bakhtiari is back.
Yes. Yes, he is.
So now, and the best part about this is that some teams, when they get their all-pro left tackle back, they get better at one position. The Packers get better at two positions.
Yep.
Because now you get your all-pro left tackle and you move your all-pro left guard back to left guard. So this is a team that's been one of the most efficient offenses in the NFL and is now solidifying the weakest part of what their offense has been.
Yeah.
Good luck.
Could be pretty good. Could be pretty good.
Good luck.
And I think Aaron Rodgers still has his arm too.
Washington's offense or defense looked better last week, you know, than it has. They gave the Chiefs a harder time than you might have guessed, considering how much they had struggled over the first month of the season. But they still have not been great this year.
Yeah.
And I still think it could be a big day for Green Bay. So something to keep an eye on. All right, let's move on here. I want to talk about the Bucs' run defense. Not whether they're good. We know they're good.
Yeah.
I think it's fascinating that teams have just given up. Teams have just given up running against them. So heading into five weeks into the season, teams were passing on 74% of early downs in neutral game scripts against the Buccaneers. They've just given up running the ball. Miles Sanders had 9 carries last week against the Bucs, and I think only 2 in the first half.
A lot of them were second half runs.
The Bucs have given up 329 rushing yards this season. That is about a third of what the Chargers have given up.
That's insane. That's absolutely insane. And that's what it looks like, too. It's just like, it's not only is it nobody's trying, but then it's just that's what's hilarious, too, is that like when they do try, it can just get so ugly that you can tell offense coaches are like, ugh.
So I wanted to explore why teams don't try. Because obviously the personnel for Tampa Bay is miserable. Yeah. Like, running against Vitavea sucks, and that is part of this. Because when teams have run, they have failed. They're second in yards per carry allowed, 3.36, fifth in success rate defensively against the run, fifth in rushing DVOA. So they're not easy to run against, but it's not as if teams are gaining 0 yards every time they run the ball. So why are teams deciding not to run against Tampa Bay? Is it just the reputation of their defenders? Is it something schematically that they're doing? When you went back and you watched, what do you think it is? What do you think is scaring teams off from even considering running the ball against the Bucs?
I think a lot of it is that reputation. Like, I think it is, especially week one with the Cowboys. I know Zach Martin was out, but it was like, you could tell they were like, well, we can't really run against this front, so let's just think and dunk side to side and get them moving, which, you know, they worked effectively. The Cowboys offense has done a lot of good things this year. I think some of that is reputation. I also think some of it is just literally they are that good. And it is really, really hard when you watch this team. They're not doing anything funky up front. They're actually kind of like so tendency driven. Like, you know, if you go base, they match base. If you go sub, they match sub. They run this front, they run this front, you know.
That's what it is to me is that they, whatever you do, you're never going to outnumber them.
Nope.
So if you're looking at the numbers, they are 12th in average box count in the NFL. 6.55 average defenders in the box, according to Next Gen Stats. That doesn't seem high, but it's because teams spread them out so much.
Yeah.
If you look at this stat, which I thought was fascinating, they have 53% loaded boxes, which means having more defenders than you have blockers. That's the third highest rate in the league. And I think if you took it a step further and you looked at how many plays they had at least as many defenders as you had blockers, it would be the highest rate in the NFL. I don't know what it is, but I wouldn't be surprised. No matter what you do, they match with just as many or more bodies in the box than you have. So in this world where we have so many RPOs and choices, nobody's going to choose to run because the numbers never dictate that you should run on top of the personnel disadvantages that you have.
And even like the best things teams are doing to them is getting them in the base and spreading them out. And so it's like teams see that, especially Cowboys were doing it week one. They're like, oh, that works. It's a copycat league. When people say that, it's not just a play. It's when how to take advantage of another team. Because you're going to look and go, okay, so every time we're in base on first and long or first and 10, they do this. Okay, so, well, if we do this, oh wow, the Cowboys week one. Did you see that play? The Cowboys play 14. They did that. Okay, and then all of a sudden that play gets installed on Wednesday. Blah, blah, blah. That's the copycatness of the copycat league. Like, it's just literally just, okay, what do we call this? Okay, that's what we're going to do. That's kind of what happens. And Todd Bowles is smart, by the way. When they go in base personnel, if they have the bat, you know, they will sit Sue and Vea for a whole series. Like, they let them rest for an entire series. I think it's like every third or fourth series I've noticed. When they're in base and they're in a 3-4 and they go 3-4 under front, with the backups in there, they'll run single high and they'll load the box with numbers. Mm-hmm. And then when Sue and Vea are in there, they'll go 3-4 under and they'll run more cover two out of it. And it's kind of funny because they know, well, those guys are going to play both gaps and you guys can't get up to the second level anyways, blah, 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 blah. So it's actually, even with the personnel, it's dictating their call. So it's just like any good unit. It's really good personnel being used the proper way. You got awesome, these guys, it's so hard with one good nose tackle. And we're going to see this. I think I'm really curious. We might talk about this more in the draft season is with more of this too high defenses being played, and the Bucs run a little bit of everything, but more too high defenses being played, and we're seeing this maybe with the Chargers defense, is that interior line play becomes so much more important because they have
I totally agree with that.
Yep, and take those double teams and everything. So now, that's why I'm glad Vitavea is kind of getting that pub where Vitavea is becoming a name everyone knows now. Because I think those types of guys are going to become more and more important for defenses that want to win this way. And there's this guy named Jordan Davis for Georgia who might be the next one. And he's ridiculous. He's going to be like, he's ridiculous at nose tackle. But I think we're going to see more and more of that. When teams went single high and they want to play single high, they're like, we'll win with bodies and speed. And so that's why edge rushers and more kind of the finesse rushers kind of came to be. I mean, you always want those guys. But I think you're just going to see an uptick of these noses having value if you play teams want to play like this.
I totally agree with that. So one other thing I wanted to touch on is that the linebackers also allow the Bucs to play a certain way.
Because they're so fast.
So they're so fast. So there was a play in week one that I think is very emblematic of this entire conversation. Bucs come out with a drive starter at their own 4-yard line. They're in 10 personnel. four receivers on the field. Bucks have their two linebackers on the field. They, as other teams in the league, do everything they can to get more defensive backs in the game. The Bucks have no interest in that.
None.
When they're healthy, they want David and White in the game. So that's already where they're a little bit different than other teams. Even if you come out with four receivers, they still want both of their off-ball linebackers on the field, which is inherently going to give you a disadvantage to run the ball.
Yes.
So they come out, the Cowboys come out in that 10 personnel set. Lavonte David is over the number three receiver in the slot, Cedric Wilson. David is 1 yard inside the hash mark, even though Wilson is on the hash mark. So he can still play the run even though he's supposed to be over Wilson. Mm-hmm. It's an RPO, right? The box is not favorable. They have a safety walk down even though they have four wide receivers on the field. Devin White's in the middle, and David has crept over into the box even though he's supposed to be covering the slot receiver. So Dak runs an RPO. What area of the field is open if they're going to do that? It's the flat. Yep. So they spit the ball out into the flat, and Lavonte David covers 15 yards in 2 seconds, and it's a 3-yard gain.
Yes.
So I looked at some of the numbers because it happened in the Eagles game as well. They came out in a split back look. They motioned Sanders out into the flat. Not a huge reaction from the Bucs defense. Minter was the linebacker on that side. He stayed pretty tight to the formation, even as that responsibility that is his was flying out into the flat. RPO, box count's not favorable because it never is. Flip it out to the flat. Minter covers the ground, 3-yard gain. So I was curious, if you're going to play your linebackers like that, you're almost daring teams to throw the ball into the flat against you.
Yep.
Teams have attempted 70 passes outside the numbers between negative 5 and 5 air yards against the Bucs, 13 more than any other team in the NFL.
Just all because of that. Hey, that's what good players could do.
They're daring you to do that.
Yeah.
They're daring you to do that. By the way that they're cramming their linebackers and players into the box, they want you to do that. So as teams are running all of these RPOs and throwing the ball and trying to replicate their run game with passes against the Bucs, it's not really working. Like, yeah. I understand it's probably the right choice, but you're tempting teams into a low efficiency way to throw the ball when you're asking them to do that. They have the second lowest air yards, the average air yards against in the NFL so far this year. Teams have thrown 141 passes less than 5 air yards against them. It's 56% of the total passes that they faced.
That makes a lot of sense. That matches. I mean, that's exactly what it is. That's what. So originally, the original RPO is bubbles, just running weak zone with a bubble out mm-hmm. there. And a lot I've heard of, it's a few teams now I've heard this, that they had the Rondé Barber rules. It was because when he was the nickel in there, he would bait you into doing what he wanted you to do. He would go, oh, no, I'm in the run fit, and you throw the bubble, and you'd knife, just undercut the guy, or you'd be like, oh, I'm playing the bubble, and then knife inside on the weak side zone. So that's what good players can do. They or a defense that knows what you're trying to accomplish against them. When you're only in a lot of limited number of looks, you're going to know what the offense is looking to beat you with. So then you can just get into the next level. Okay, I know what you know, which I know. And then you go from there. Like we said with the Packers offense, it's the wrinkles on the wrinkles. But this is more of personnel knowing what they can accomplish. It's good players and a good sound scheme. Best type of stuff.
Building a portfolio with Fidelity Basket Portfolios is kind of like making a sandwich. It's as simple as picking your stocks and ETFs, sort of like your meats and other topics, and managing it as one big, juicy investment. Now that's pretty good. Learn more at fidelity.com/baskets. Investing involves risk, including risk of loss. Fidelity Brokerage Services, LLC. Member NYSE SIPC.
I want to talk about the Bengals-Ravens game a little bit. Big game. Obviously, like, it's an encouraging season from the Bengals so far. Big game. I wanted to talk about what Ja'Marr Chase has given the Bengals offense, because obviously his numbers are excellent so far, and he's given them a new dimension in a lot of ways. I want to talk about how that's changed what the Bengals can do offensively, and also just what it means this week against the Ravens. So watching just the structure of the Bengals offense this year with him compared to what it might have looked like last year, what has it given them the chance to do in your mind?
Well, I thought it was interesting is now they have made him the true X receiver and traditional. If they're in a 3x1 set, he's the one. If they're in a 2x2 set, he is with the slot away. He's always away from the tight end. So obviously they have trusted him because they're going like, hey, you're going to win those one-on-ones that we line up for you. I think it just what it gives them is someone that can actually finish on these intermediate and deep balls. I think the thing with Chase is he is explosive, but the thing with Chase that's so incredible is he can give late hands on those fade and go balls. That is it's remarkable. I mean, that's the best trait he has. He is very strong, but the best trait he has, that ball's in the air, he can track with the best of them and then at the very last second pop his hands out, because DBs are taught, hey, look at the eyes, look at the hands, and when those hands come out, they'll try and swipe them. You know, the best ever at it was Randy Moss, but that's what Chase has, that ability. It's kind of really, really cool. That ball comes down, he has no separation, and that last 2 yards, he just spurts away. So I think it's just giving them that chunk of the field that they can attack now. I love T. Higgins, but T. Higgins is not the most explosive guy vertically. He's more of that big body, you body him up, and actually I think he is more of an X, traditional X, which is kind of funny, but that's what it's done. Now he can be an X. It's a different look. They can get more verticality out of that position than they had before.
The late hands is such a good point. And when so I was cool. a little bit, I thought Ja'Marr Chase is a super exciting player in college. Yeah. I had faith that Ja'Marr Chase would be a good NFL receiver. I didn't think he should get taken in the top five because I thought that he wasn't like a perfect out of this world prospect, because I was concerned about what it would look like at the line of scrimmage.
Yes.
Could he create separation at the line of scrimmage? Teams have decided just to give him free releases all the time.
All the time.
Consistently, which is a curious choice, but we can get to that later. So, he hasn't had any issues with early separation because teams haven't forced him to create it. He is incredible at creating late separation. He has such a good feel for it, and just not something that I really saw on his college tape, but it's something that has shown up all the time so far in the NFL. The play that you're talking about from the Bengals or from the Lions game, he's not open.
No.
It's a go ball down the right sideline. He is not open. It is decent coverage from an undrafted cornerback. It's a beautiful ball by Joe Burrow. His arm strength is not crazy in terms of like driving the ball, but he throws a pretty deep ball down the field in terms of accuracy. Drops it right in the bucket. Chase goes late hands, 35-yard reception. He had a couple other plays where he was open late, just creating separation at the top of routes. He has a very good understanding of how to settle into voids and kind of get away from people with subtle movements at the top of stuff. And then his other long reception in this game, and this is the other way he creates late separation, his acceleration is bonkers.
Yeah.
It was very cool play. I don't know. Lions were in cover three. Post safety was sitting like 12 yards off the line of scrimmage, just covering no one. I have no idea what he was doing. No idea what he was doing. So it looked like a quarters beater, because it was a post with a little sit down from Higgins on the other side, but they were in cover three and it still worked, which it probably shouldn't have, but what are you going to do? So all of this comes with a grain of salt. So the corner on that side is outside leverage, and Chase had been kind of running these like comebacks all day, like threading vertically, coming back underneath. So he's taking it down the field. He turns his head to his right, just giving a slight indication that he's going to throttle down and come back inside. After the slight head turn and a slight slowdown, just the slightest slowdown, he just hits the gas. And it's that might not look like a really nuanced, impressive play by a young guy. That little head turn is what allows that 50-yard reception to happen. And that is what he does. He has these little tiny subtleties to his game in those moments late in downs that have allowed him to create some of these plays, and you've seen it show up. Last year, Burrow was 28th of 31 qualified quarterbacks in EPA per dropback on passes of 20-plus air yards. The only guys in the league who were worse than him were Jimmy Garoppolo,
yeah,
Chad Henne, and Mitchell Trubisky. Okay,
not Big Ben? I thought we were Big Ben in there. I know.
This year, Burrow is 4th in EPA per play on passes of 20-plus air yards. The only guys who are better are Kyler Murray,
yeah,
Carson Wentz, and Russell Wilson.
Okay.
So it's completely transformed.
Wentz. Okay.
Carson Wentz has pushed the ball down the field very well this year.
Hold on. I know those names. I was like, okay. Wait, hold on one second.
Carson Wentz.
Okay.
So you've gone from having one of the least efficient downfield passing games in the league to one of the most efficient downfield passing games in the league. And Ja'Marr Chase is a huge reason for that.
Absolutely.
And it's created space for them in other ways. Teams are already accounting for him. When you watch teams run cover two against the Bengals, those corners that are supposed to be in the flat are getting a ton of depth with him as he's going down the sideline for that hole shot. And it's creating a lot of space for them to attack underneath. It really is working. Like, all of the pieces fit together. Seth Galina wrote something really interesting for PFF a couple weeks ago just about how stagnant some aspects of the Bengals' offense are. You know, when they run empty, it's not a lot of bunches. They don't really help their guys. Their running game is pretty predictable. I think there's still a ways for this offense to go, but I think the gear he's given them and just what he's allowed them to do in that aspect has been really important for what we've seen from them. Because their offense is not efficient, but it has been explosive at times this year.
And he's the main reason for it. And that speaks to, we talked to about quarterbacks creating, and you could talk about a running back creating in the run game when the hole's not there. But this is what receivers can do. It's like, oh, they only created 1 yard of separation on this pass concept, and it's like, he made it happen. You know, it was a 20% go ball probability. He makes it a 60% chance. That's what a good receiver can do in theory. And that's what he does. I'm very excited to watch this matchup, because if he... Speaking of predictability, now that they lined him up at the X, I could tell you with my eyes closed, whatever formation they're in, I could tell you exactly where he's lined up. 1x3, he's in the slot.
Which is a problem, right?
Exactly, because they're going against a defense that is very good with tendencies and very good at heating quarterbacks up and very good. They are very good running man coverage that presses a lot. So this is going to be a very, very telling matchup for not only Ja'Marr Chase, but this whole Bengals team. I mean, obviously.
How do you think they defend him?
Ravens do not change what they are, for better or for worse. I think they still run man. I think Marlon Humphrey travels with him. And I'll talk about it in the gambling segment. That's why I think Tyler Boyd.
Cue that thing up.
I know. And that's why I'm speaking to why him being the true X and where he lines up, they're going to know. So Marlon Humphrey all week goes, okay, 3x1, I'm over here. 2x2, I'm over here. They can know and game plan stuff up. I'm very, very excited for that matchup. I really am.
Yeah, he's been... Again, just aspects to his game I didn't anticipate, because it just, he was a bully ball guy. I mean, like, he just was winning with like physicality and contested catches, and now they're not contested because he's just been so good at creating late separation. And that
still has to work on curl routes, by the way. I'm not going to let him off all the way easy. I have one thing he can work on is curl routes. He is too eager to come back. He can get very loose on them. And so if you notice, the two of them went high. And like at first I was like, Burrow sailed him. It's because he's working back so hard, chases, that Burrow's like, oh shit. And he throws it toward, because curl routes are actually an anticipation throw. We don't think of them that way, but you're throwing to a spot because as they're breaking, that's where you're expecting them to be at the certain spot. So if they're loose on the break, like too rounded on the break, or they come back too hard, it could throw it off a little bit. But if I have one criticism, but he has been very impressive so far.
Well, that's that's where, like, there are aspects to their partnership. Their trust is obvious. Like,
tons of trust.
The way their chemistry is really very cool to watch.
That absolutely matters.
The one aspect, though, with his skill set and with his explosiveness down the field, theoretically, he should be able to work underneath eventually. Like, that should be the next step of this. Those, like, deep at the sticks plays that we see from, like, Justin Herbert, where if it's 3rd and 12, I can throw it to the sticks and I can just fire that thing
pin
in there.
Yeah.
Those aren't going to be available to the Bengals. It's correct. Just like, that is one aspect of their offense. When you see the way he's working, those curls, those like deep curl routes, that could be a monster for them. But those windows are going to be tight for Burrow. That's when the arm shows up.
Yep. It's all got to be movement stuff where he can anticipate. That's such a good point.
So it's like, I saw that. Those two exact plays that you're talking about, it's like, that's
I know
be
you
meat
see
him
the too. You're
like that's going to be meat on the bone for them.
I know.
All right, last thing here. We have not talked much about him in comparison to some of the other rookie quarterbacks. I just wanted to do a very quick Mac Jones check-in, because I hadn't studied him really in depth, and I know I hadn't even talked to you about it. So when you went back and you watched Mac Jones here over the last few weeks, what stood out to you?
He is so accurate. I can tell you that he is I can see why. Coaches, you heard all the rumors of the, and you know, you hear one rumor, you're like, whatever, but when there's smoke, there's fire. When you start hearing like 5, 7, 8, 10 people report it, is that he was such an impressive interview in the offseason process and the draft process.
because one, you can tell he's tough. I mean, the shots he's taking are like, they look like they're all wrestling reels. Like, I mean, he's taking clotheslines, he's taking spears. I think he took a rock bottom. Like, I mean, he gets the Bucks, but he's psycho competitive. And I can, this past week, he had a play where he's coming off the field and he's like MFing somebody. They had to burn a timeout. You can see the shot clock running. He's trying to fix the shifts and motions that they had, and they put a lot on him. I'll talk about it in a sec. But he's trying to fix it. It gets set, but he looks at the sideline, and I think the coach is like, hey, we're going to call a timeout. They burn the timeout. They show him walking off the field, and he is MFing somebody. And I think it was him. I think it was himself or the coach. And Josh McDaniels had to go like, hey, we're good, man. Hey, we're good. And then you can see him go like, yeah, I'm okay. I just had to get it out. And he jogs back on the field. And it was like, okay, I can see why people were like kind of grew on this guy as they interviewed him. Because it was like, that shit does matter. Because it is, that carries over to other guys. Like, good or bad. You see the guys living in fear. Like, you know, you see, you know, people that played with Peyton Manning lived in fear, I'm sure, of getting yelled at by a psycho-competitive quarterback. But then you also get the guys that just want perfection out of their guys. And it grows when you're expecting that stuff. But that's, it's cool to see out of a rookie, because even in preseason and then now throughout the weeks, seeing that whole pre-snap process and his control of it, they throw a lot at him. They shift emotion a whole ton, especially in the run game. He's pointing the mic. He'll do protection stuff. He's hand signaling guys. So they've thrown a lot at him, so that's really impressive. So it's like, those are all the positives, super accurate, all this. The downside is, yeah, he is limited athletically. He can throw off platform, but he can't create. It is what it is. Like, that is what he is at this point. This is the most athletic we'll ever see him as a rookie, unless you're Tom Brady. You usually are the most athletic when you're really young. So, like, I think that's what you got to take what he is. He is Chad Pennington. I mean, that is what he is. He is so supremely accurate, and it's so smart, so tough, so competitive that it's gonna, like, you see the path to his success, even if the upside, the super high upside, isn't there. But it's fun to watch him.
The way he processes is very impressive. He gets off stuff so quickly for a young quarterback. I mean, this is not first read stuff. I mean, he's coming from one to two. I mean, the touchdown to Jacoby Myers, I'm pretty sure he came back to that, the one that was called back, and it's just like, okay.
Yeah, I know.
All right. So I think that brings me to this question. If this is what he looks like now, how far can he go? Like, if that is what you are as your quarterback profile, you're a guy that processes quickly, you're extremely accurate, but you're limited in terms of tools. He doesn't have that. His arm is not very good, and he's not athletic. Where do those limits start to show up? Where can teams start to just overall put a cap on what you can provide if that's the profile of quarterback that you are?
And they can run more man on you. They can run more two man, especially, and man coverage, just straight man, and not worry about you beating them with their legs. So what that would make Mac Jones, and guys can win like this, trust me, I'm not saying this is impossible, it just makes it harder, is that he has to be perfect on every read. He just has to be. And I trust that he can do that. That's where the limitations have come. So every time you can watch it too, it's like, every snap of the ball, he knows exactly where to go. And you can tell he knows exactly where to go. It's like the snap of the ball, he is like, I mean, I'm watching, I'm like, he's right. That's the right read. I don't have to doubt that. He gets to two. Good. He always gets to two. It's always getting to three, or always shortcutting to three, because he can never use his legs as number three. And that matters in the long run, because you're not always going to get the perfect look. You're not always going to be right on your first read. You're not always going to have the right call. You're going to have to get to that. And so it's just that's where the upside, or the limitations come in. So like, his path is to basically be like late career Drew Brees. I mean, that's what it is. It's just perfect on every single snap, and he can get there. I do trust. I think where the growth is going to be right now, he's better out of the gun than he is under center, which is not what you would think of a quarterback coming out of Alabama, but that's what their system was. It was heavy RPOs, it was heavy gun play action. I think he's still getting comfortable with the under center stuff, and that's where he'll see his first step of growth. But he just has to be perfect mentally. And I do think that has to be there, but that's the thing, is that he has to be perfect mentally. And it's hard when you don't have arm strength to maybe give you more room for error.
Even the negative plays last Sunday were mostly not his fault. I mean, he took a couple sacks, instant sacks.
The spear was not his fault. He's just getting ready to set up.
I mean, it's less than 2.5 seconds where guys are just in the backfield. Both of those Randy Gregory sacks, I mean, that's not on the quarterback. I think the quarterbacks do have some responsibility for their own protection. Not there. They've had offensive line issues, which I think, again, speaks to just how the fact that he's been able to function and operate in the way that he has is impressive. And then two drops. I mean, balls that just hit guys in the hands multiple times led to an interception. That ball was not perfect. Totally on target. It wasn't perfect. But there was another third down drop from Aguilar that was a perfect ball. And so, yeah, I mean, it's what he is right now is impressive for a young quarterback. But I got it will always come down to, and this is a conversation for way later because we're going to get to Shield here in a second. How far can it go?
Yeah.
Like, how far is he from the end? How much left does he have in the tank? And if he's reached his potential or is like 87% of the quarterback that he's eventually going to become, how does that compare to the other young guys? He's clearly ahead of them, but this isn't about 2021. Yeah. When you draft the guy in the first round, it's not who's going to be the best quarterback right away. It's where can we go 3-4 years from now? You know, Kyler Murray was not this guy in 2019, and that matters. So I think that's just what to keep in mind. That's something to keep in mind. But for what he is right now, I don't think you could ask for anything more.
And it's that, and that speaks to it. When we talk about, hey, that's why you go with the quarterback and you set your path. Now you kind of know which guys to put with him, like as far as skill guys. Yeah, and they have Kendrick Bourne and Aguilar and all that, Hunter Henry and Jonnu Smith. But now it looks like, hey, we need guys that can create yak because he's going to get the ball in their hands right away at a perfect spot where they can get upfield right away. Okay, so now maybe we need some more guys that are yak guys that can create after the catch as opposed to maybe route technicians that they have right now. So that's – but that talks about – we have talked about a million times. When you plant your foot with a quarterback, now the rest of the organizational decisions kind of come into light. Now it's like – okay, we got to go with this. We got with this. Why do you think the Chiefs go with speed, 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 speed? It's because they have this guy named Patrick Mahomes that can launch the ball 80 yards and do all this stuff and get the ball in their hands. It's like now I think the Patriots are going to go, okay, maybe if Belichick can adjust his receiver scouting, is maybe we can get some guys that can create after the catch. So that's another thing, the upside of knowing you have a guy early on.
All right. That's all we got. It's time to get to Shield. It's time to get to this week's picks. All right, it's time now for this week's pick segment. I am thrilled to welcome our good buddy, Shil Kapadia. Shil, you have walked into something that you were not expecting.
I was not. You know, I wasn't sure quite what was going on. I did not know what Nate had to do this week, but now I am finding it out. I will say, well, why don't you take the honors, and then I'll offer my observations.
So for everyone that did not that missed last week's show, we put two lukewarm locks thrown forward by our warriors here in this year-long picks participation. Shil picked the Vikings. He got that right, giving him 3 points. He missed his other two games, but getting that huge boost goes to 12.5 points on the year. Nate gets two of his three picks correct, but loses his lukewarm lock of the week, going to 8.5 points of the year. So Shil is a commanding 4-point lead, but more importantly, Nate misses his lukewarm lock, meaning that he has to endure a punishment this week. And because it was the Browns, about 2/3 of the way through that game, when it seemed like the Browns were not only not going to win by more than three, but lose, I started perusing the internet for some options. Obviously, the Browns, famous for the dog pound in their stadium, whatever you want to call it. It's First Energy Stadium, I think it is now. Whatever you want to call that stadium by the lake. So I was looking for some dog masks on the internet, and thankfully I found one. Those of you listening right now can't see it. We will be putting it on some sort of video platform here over the next few hours. Nate is wearing a ridiculous German Shepherd mask with his silver Bose headphones, and it's going to be really hard for me to keep it together this entire show. Nate, how you feeling over there?
I'm okay. I'm regretting the lukewarm lock because this is a hot mask. I'm looking at you guys out of one eye hole, and then I have to look through the other eye hole to look at like what my picks are and everything. So this is gonna be an interesting 20 odd minutes right now. But yeah, totally regretting the Browns. I love how you said 2/3 of the game through. I think it was more like 1/3 of the game through, like quarter and a half. I think you could have looked up this mask.
What was the update on the injury report that made you feel the worst beforehand? Like, who had to be out for you to be like, well, this was probably a mistake?
I actually was feeling okay when I heard Rodney Hudson was out, too. I was like, okay, that'll negate some of it. You know, didn't matter. Kyler Murray just stomping all over me. Just those little steps, just 50 little steps onto my heart. But no, I think it was the offensive tackles being out. Once I saw Conklin out as well, it was like, oh, boy. And then Chubb out, it was like, oh, boy. It's like, Cliff's gone. Eh, that's kind of a neutral effect. But then it was like, all right. But then it just went on from there. Kyler just took over, and that's why he's doing what he's doing this year. I can't even see how you guys are reacting right now. I can see the top corner of my window.
Well, when I first logged on, you had the mask in your lap, and I actually thought that you got a dog or were dog sitting. I know you have a cat. I didn't think you had a dog, but I'm going, all right, that's interesting. He's just petting a dog there. But I will say this, since I know you're not feeling great, Nate, I will say this. You took that mask off to readjust your headphones and your mic. I got to say, your hair looked like immaculate, even when the mask was on and then the mask was off. So as a bald man, you know, to somebody who's probably not feeling great at this time, you've got that to hang your hat on. The hair was looking fantastic.
I appreciate it. I got a 50-50 shot of balding because just look at my dad. And so I'm trying to appreciate the hair I have. Like, I have no idea if I get to keep it. But I just got a haircut for the first time in 3 months this week, so... My wife's going to be really happy to hear that. She finally got me to go.
Sheila, your hair envy is one of my favorite parts of your entire personality.
Thank you.
It's really the only edge that Nate has on you right now as you continue to stomp him in this competition that we have going. So again, because Sheila won this week, we're going to let him tee off first. Week 7, what's your first one for us here, buddy?
All right, I am going to go to Gillette. It's still called Gillette, right? I'm with
it
you.
It is still Gillette, yes.
It's still Gillette, okay. The New England Patriots are 7-point favorites over the New York Jets. I feel like generally most of my commentary and analysis on the Patriots is that people are overrating them. And, you know, this week I was critical of Bill Belichick for his game management last week against the Cowboys. I don't know what he was doing there at the end of the first half against that Cowboys offense to just waste a possession like that. I thought that deserved as much criticism as everything Mike McCarthy did. However, in this game, only 7 points kind of surprised me. You know, the Jets offense is 32nd in DVOA, 32nd in EPA per drive, 32nd in points scored. And like we saw this matchup earlier this season, not too long ago, week 2, the Patriots win that game 25-6. And since that game, I feel like the Patriots have gotten better. You know, I'm not buying them as like a legit contender or anything, but they're certainly a competent team that was competitive against the Cowboys, competitive against Tampa. And I don't know that the Jets are better since that game. I mean, they're more injured since that game, and maybe there's been like a flash or two here and there. They did win a game, but I feel like the Patriots are going to be able to handle them pretty well. I like the matchup, of course, of Bill Belichick coming up with a game plan against Zach Wilson. So I'm going with the Patriots -7 over the Jets.
I'm curious. I mean, that does seem a little bit low to me when you consider how bad the Jets have been. It's not like the Patriots offense is lighting it up. So if you're going to bet the Jets in this game, just to play devil's advocate, what kind of game do you think it would be to keep this within 7? I'm just trying to imagine what that type of outcome would look like.
Yeah, I think you can count, you know, you could say, well, maybe the Jets defense can hold them in check a little bit. You know, they've had some moments where they've looked good this year. And then kind of what I just mentioned, I mean, the Patriots are not a step on your throat kind of team. So, you know, they could be up by 14 and it's not really a game and they're up 21-7 in the fourth quarter, but the Jets have the ball with 3 minutes left and get like a garbage time touchdown.
Yeah.
And maybe all of a sudden you get a push or you lose there. I do have, you know, I have a hard time coming up with the scenario where the Jets win this game, but at 7, you know, the stats, the history tells us if you're a 7-point dog, I think you have like a 25% chance to win the game outright. So the markets are telling us, you know, not to count them out. I think it would be a situation where the Patriots offense plays really poorly. Maybe you get something on special teams and you're able to navigate it that way.
Like a 20-14 type of game, just
right.
Like an ugly game that stays closer than it should. I guess I can understand that. But when I saw that line originally, I was like, ooh, yeah, that does look pretty good. Because I do think the Patriots offense is playing better and the Jets have been kind of a disaster. So I completely get that. Yeah. All right.
And I mean, just
Dog Man, what do you got over there? What's your first one?
Nate Dog. Honestly, it's like
Nate Dog was right there. It was right there.
Actually, even seeing what the ringer that that Belichick put Dak through last week. Now imagine I'm doing it with Zach Wilson, going like,
all the
eye candy's going to do with that. I mean, because they're tweaking stuff. They're, it's pretty cool watching that Patriots defense right now. But all right. There is a lot of stupid lines this week in the sense that there's double-digit lines, like big, big lines. And I'm
huge
actually
going to
take one of them. I'm going to go with the Bears +12.5 at the Bucks. And this is more of a, I do think the Bucks are clearly the better team, probably best team right now. But I'm betting that this Bears defense is going to be able to muck it up just enough to kind of keep it close, keep it a 10-point game, an 11-point game. I think this, yeah, this Bears offense, the run game has been improving the last couple of weeks. We've talked about it, Robert. And Justin Fields has improved in this last couple of weeks. They're figuring out what they are still, but I'm hoping that this game is like a 24-14 ugly battle, something like that, or a sneak.
27-17 is what I was thinking of. Okay. I think something like that.
Or it's, you know, something like that where it's like 31-17 and then they score a touchdown late. Boom. It's like, okay, oh, wow, they only lost by seven, but it was the Bucks dominated the whole game. But I do believe in this Bears defense. I've come away impressed watching them against this Packers offense this past week. It's like, okay, I'm like buying more and more stock of what they're doing. So I do think that they can kind of keep up, but this Bucks team is going to overwhelm them in the long run. I'm just hoping for an ugly game in Tampa Bay. So Bears plus 12.5.
Those double-digit lines creeping up towards two touchdowns, those are usually saved for true mismatch blowout type games. Like, the Bears aren't a good team, but 12.5 is a ton of points in week seven for a team that has shown some competence defensively. Like, what's the Rams-Lions line?
I think it's
15.5, I believe.
Yeah. Jesus.
There's three that are over 12. Cardinals, who are the Cardinals playing? The Cardinals Texans was 17.5 when I wrote my column. So there are three monstrous lines this week. I was actually, you know, trying to look up sort of double digit favorites and, you know, in the past kind of what's happened. And, it's obviously near like 50-50. Brady's, you know, Brady totally like distorts it because his teams have typically covered. But I mean, those, you know, those were great teams. And yeah, I'm with you guys. I feel like the Bears have at least been competent. They can do some things defensively. They can generate a pass rush with four if they need to, which, you know, as we know, the one way if you're going to. And the Bucks do some stupid stuff. I mean, they're not, you know, masters in terms of game management, or they'll have some penalties. They'll have some negative plays. So it's not like, you know, you don't. There are stretches where you watch them and are like, this is a well-oiled machine. But usually there's like a quarter in there throughout one of those games where you're like, all right, they're, you know, they don't look as great here. So that's not one of my picks, but I did pick that in my column too, going with the Bears there. I was surprised the line was that high.
Yeah, I'm totally with both of you guys on that. All right, Shia, what's your second one here?
So I had a strategy that, you know, after I'll probably lose this Patriots-Jets one early in the day, and then rather than ruin my entire afternoon, let's just, you know, wait until the nighttime to screw up.
So you can ruin 2 days.
Yeah, great idea. But it's after dark, you know? Like, you know, people aren't looking through my window here at my right going, why does this guy look so sad? He just sits in that office all day making terrible football takes and terrible picks. So I'm going to go nighttime here, and let's start with Sunday night, and that is the Colts at the 49ers. The Colts are 4-point underdogs here. I feel like I've been going against the Colts a lot this year, but I'm going to flip that a little bit and take Indy to beat that spread of 4 points. You know, you look at the 49ers, they've got Jimmy G, it sounds like, as of this pod, he's going to be coming back, but he's coming off a calf injury. You know, I don't know that he's going to be 100% there. If you're looking for a mismatch, certainly DeForest Buckner against the interior of that 49ers offensive line, that could be an issue for San Francisco. Also, in terms of the run game, you know, the 49ers run game statistically has been pretty mediocre this year, and the Colts have ranked first in rushing DVOA defensively. So if they don't have that to lean on, I know they still got the play action and they can scheme some things up, but I feel like that's just going to be sort of a low scoring, don't lose the game, conservative type approach from Kyle Shanahan. And so I don't really trust Carson Wentz in that Colts offense against this 49ers defense, but I think Frank Reich has been, I don't want to say conservative, but certainly leaned on that run game quite a bit. And I think Jonathan Taylor has probably been one of the most maybe underrated performers through the first 6 weeks of the season. I mean, it feels like he's reeling off a huge game-changing run every week. And so if he can do that in this game, I think they'll run the ball quite a bit. And if you look at the Colts last three games, you know, they had that tough loss at Baltimore, but they really outplayed them on the road for three quarters, and we saw what the Ravens did last week. I mean, that's a legit team right there. And then the Colts have had a couple blowout wins against bad teams, the Dolphins and the Texans. So maybe they're finding themselves at least a little bit. You know, they've certainly been better in the last three games than they were in the first three games. So I've got the Colts covering 4 points there.
And I think that their offensive line is getting healthier. I want to say Quentin Nelson is going to play this week, or he's been practicing. So he might be back this week. And the Braden Smith thing is kind of lingering. I think there's some confusion about when he's going to get back on the field. But you know, hopefully he'll be back sooner rather than later. So you have what has traditionally been a strength for them back almost in fully intact. And even with those offensive line concerns, you know, the Colts are seventh in EPA per play offensively.
Yeah. Wow. I didn't know
I mean,
that,
their offense has been better than I expect them to be. They've picked on bad teams. I think their DVOA is more closer to the middle of the pack, like 15 or something when you adjust for opponent. But their offense has been better than I anticipated it being, especially when you consider some of the injuries that they've had. So I think that line might be an indication, kind of an example of the public maybe not catching up with just how competent the Colts have looked here over the last few weeks.
Isn't it kind of funny that I actually would have sided more with the 49ers if Trey Lance was playing? Just because it's like he throws that extra kind of like chaos in there. Like just like
okay. Yeah, there's a volatility to it. I totally
get
that.
And that's the thing. I see exactly what Shield when bringing up Nelson, the injury coming back, like that's the other thing. It was like that was in the back of my head. I almost picked this exact same line that Shield did. So it's kind of funny. Exact same points. I see it the same way. Jonathan Taylor's playing great. DeForest Buckner is like still just a dominant force. I mean, that rushing DVOA is not by mistake. It is. They have some talented players there. Okay.
All right, Nate, what do you got for us?
Let's see if I can see it. All right, so all right.
This is weird giving my picks to a dog. You know, you look like, you know, when I cover that Eagles team and Chris Long and Lane Johnson put on they're in the Super Bowl year. You know, I'm having flashbacks to being in the locker room, going up to Lane, hey, what's the story behind these underdog? That's the type of dog we've got here, Maze, right?
I tried to make it a little bit different than that one, but again. Okay. A limited selection of dog masks. I don't know if we said that before the show or earlier in the show. Fewer purchasable dog masks on the internet than you might think.
That's so surprising.
Not a robust set of options. So I didn't want the exact Eagles underdog mask, but this one was sort of close. But again, we had a limited group to choose from.
I love how that we talked about underdogs, and then my next two picks are favorites. So we're going to go in this next one. We're going to go... a little AFC North battle. We're going to go with the Ravens -6.5 hosting the Bengals. I'm happy that this is under a touchdown. I think this is a Ravens team that's like tweaked what they are. We've talked about it a couple times, Robert, but just also really just honing in on what they are, like especially on offense. The run game isn't what we have seen the last couple years, but it's still dangerous with Lamar back there. And I also think this passing game, it just with the spread passing, and it's really unlocked so much for them because now you really take away the blitz opportunities. And the Bengals aren't a heavy blitz team, but they do throw some in there, and it's going to just open it up for Lamar. I'm just trying to read my notes here. the Bengals defense has played well. Oh, yeah, they're really smart. Okay, this Bengals defense is smart. They're going to try and limit the explosive plays. We've seen them do it to a couple teams now, but I just think that with Lamar, he has just a little bit too much speed. They have too much explosiveness in that unit. Hollywood Brown, Mark Andrews is catching the ball consistently, and he's like, that's unlocking so much. I don't know which Bengals linebackers would be able to match up with him on the interior. And also just Rashad Bateman coming back. I just think this passing attack will just be able to, you know, just go and go and go and go with Lamar running and running and running. And I also just think it's the Ravens defense. They're going to play that man coverage. Bengals are really have to rely, I think, on Tyler Boyd in this game. And then whether they can maintain that through all four quarters, I don't know. I don't know. This being 6.5, I think that's a fair line, but I'm going to take the Ravens under a touchdown. And I'm out of breath. Every time I'm talking to this, I'm out of breath.
I'm having flashbacks at, you know, Halloween as a kid when you say, you know, like the first time you put on the mask and it was a little bit more, I don't know about you guys, but it was a little bit more of like a humid night. And I'm like outside just being the biggest baby to my parents, you know, complaining. It's saying, you know, this mask is hot. You put it on when you go trick or treat, keep the mask on, get the candy, take it off as you walk to the next house. So I you know, like 8-year-old Sheil is really, you know, feeling your pain.
That's
there,
the toughest part of Michael Myers. Like, it's not that he can withstand bullet wounds and gunshots and explosions. It's that he'd keep a mask on that entire time, that William Shatner mask the entire time, and not complain one bit about it.
So, Nate, I know you're like a horror movie buff. I don't love horror movies. Like, there are certain horror movies that I really care about deeply, but they're offshoot horror movies. Like, I think Cabin in the Woods is brilliant.
Yeah.
And it's because it's not really a horror movie. Like, it's a meta horror movie. And so I like horror comedies, but real horror movies, I'm a baby and I just don't love them so much. I didn't know that that was a William Shatner mask until yesterday. I had no idea that it was like some weird converted William Shatner mask that he wore in the original, and that's been what they've done the entire time. I did not know this was common knowledge. Apparently it is.
I know. The first one, the very first Halloween, you can see it more. And of course it gets beat up as like the years go on. But like, yeah, I know. And I think they interviewed Shatner about it. I didn't see what his quotes were, but I'm very curious. It's like, oh yeah, your face is a horror icon. How do you feel? how does that feel? People are terrified of what you look like in a ghost white mask.
But the original mask is terrifying. Yeah. I saw the original Shatner mask because they widened the eye holes a little bit and they painted it white to make it less recognizable. But the original one is like Uncanny Valley nonsense. Like, who would buy that for themselves and wear it on Halloween? Like, it was absolutely disgusting and terrifying.
That's what it is. I mean, that's just an added element to it. You just got to worry about William Shatner's face staring at you as they slit your throat.
Oh, my God. All right, Gio. Let's finish it off here. What do you got for us?
Let me get a quick Raven stat since I looked it up. And, you know, sometimes you get something good and you're just like, I have to get it out there in every medium. So that's this. The Ravens, since that's all I'm doing. I'm just hijacking the show for my own, personal feelings.
Listen, you make it better that way. We don't really have much going for us.
Since 2019, the Ravens have outscored their opponents by 461 points. No other team is better than plus 298. I thought that was crazy. Like, far and away, over the last 3 years, they're 30-8 in the regular season. Sometimes I forget that. All right. I'm putting a moratorium on me picking the Fighting Joe Judges anymore after, the way last week went. I'm just out, if I pick the Giants or something, if we can set something up where I get, like, zapped or something when I even think about picking the Giants on this show, that would be helpful. But this one is in the same neighborhood. And that's the Seattle Seahawks at home.
No.
Against the New Orleans Saints, Seattle Seahawks are 4.5-point underdogs at home. What we learned about last week, you don't bet against Geno Smith in prime time. Come on. I know they didn't win the game, but they covered. And for our purposes, that is all that matters. And so I look at this game and like Pete Carroll's loving this. No one's going to be yelling at him about let Geno cook. He can just run the ball 35 times in the game. I thought their cornerbacks actually played pretty well in that game. Their defense was a little bit better than we had seen in the first part of the season. I think the Saints, we've seen how Sean Payton is going to coach with Jameis Winston in a game like this. He's going to do everything in his power to not let Jameis lose the game. But Jameis going on the road in Seattle in prime time, I mean, is he going to be able to help himself, to not having at least a couple turnovers in that game? I don't think so. So not only am I taking the Seahawks plus 4.5, but when you get on a streak with these, lukewarm locks of the week, I don't know, there could be some sponsorship opportunities just for my personal lukewarm locks of the week. I'm so hot on them. I'm taking Geno Smith and the Seahawks as my lock, plus 4.5. Seattle, I love you. Bring it home.
We got to have some like furnace company or some like heating company sponsor you. It's just like Williams Heating lukewarm lock of the week for Shokapadia.
Listen, in adulthood, that could be very valuable. It's like now you get socks or something for a present. It's fantastic. I mean, that's the equivalent.
If somebody wants to give me a free heater, I'm not going to turn it down. My favorite part of this entire setup, though, is now you have a game in the early slate on Sunday. You have the Sunday night game, and you have the Monday night game. Mm. So you are going to be an irritable, worst version of yourself over the course of like 36 straight hours, which your family is going to have to deal with. I absolutely love that.
I think they're going to the zoo on Sunday, I believe my daughter told me. So, listen, we pre-plan. We're not rookies at this. We know we know how to operate when dad is ornery and being a jerk to everybody.
Dad's betting on Geno Smith, kid. Please leave the house.
They gotta learn sometime. Yeah.
All right, Nate Dogg, let's ride this out here. What do you got for me?
I am also doing my lukewarm lock of the week because old dogs don't learn new tricks. That's what's going on right here. But I am going with maybe the opposite of Geno Smith. I'm going with Patrick Mahomes and the Chiefs -5.5 at the Titans.
Wow.
I think this. I can only scream it to the heavens so many times. This Chiefs offense is ridiculous. They're averaging 3.14 points per drive, and that's with going one-fifth of their drives ending in a turnover. Over 20% of their drives have ended in a turnover, which leads the league, and they're still averaging over a field goal a drive. It is ridiculous what they're doing on offense right now. I think they're at 60% on third down. No offense has finished over 50%. Oh, no, one offense has finished over 50% in the last decade. That was like the Saints in like 2011. So I just think that they've hit some bad luck with the turnovers. I think that's going to regress, and I'm betting that the regression happens now. And now is when they just roll on people. When now it's not these 7-point wins, 8-point wins, 9-point wins. It's more of a 17-point win, a 14-point win that we know from the Chiefs. I think this Titans team, I love what the offense is doing. They're getting healthy, the receivers especially. They can't really threaten, I think, passing game-wise, how the Chiefs need to be threatened. I do think the run game is going to get after them. They're going to have a couple big plays. But I think just if they have a drive where they don't get a score and they end with a field goal instead of a touchdown, then Chiefs are just going to pull away, because I just don't think this Titans defense can keep up with this Chiefs offense. So going with the Chiefs, -5.5 on the road in Tennessee, and it is my lukewarm lock. I can't wait to figure out what Chiefs gear I'm wearing next week, or Titans gear, either one. I don't know which one it is, probably Chiefs gear, but yeah, lukewarm lock, Chiefs -5.5.
I need people to take the dog mask and be inspired. That's what I need. If one of these guys screws this up, we need somebody out there to come up with some good ideas, because we need to keep this rolling. So this is the realm. This is the world, the playground that we want to be playing in. So looking at the Titans, do we know who's playing cornerback for the Titans? Caleb Farley's on IR. Christian Fulton's on IR. The guy with the long sleeves who almost had a pick last week, whose name I can't remember, was thrust in there because they ran out of corners. Yeah. Like, this seems like a dicey situation playing against Patrick Mahomes and the Chiefs offense.
That's exactly what I'm
yeah, I think
on.
The, you know, yeah, I think the Titans, you know, if you're on the – I actually took the Titans in this one only because I get nervous when a team is an underdog like this, and I feel like they can score like 30-plus pretty easily, which, I mean, I'm with you. You've had good luck, Nate. I think you've taken the Chiefs as like road favorites for – you know, I feel like they've been 7 or under a couple weeks this season, and you've had them every time, and I think they've won every time. So I think if you're the Titans, you look at it and say, all right, maybe the Chiefs only get 8 possessions in this game, and on one of them we force a turnover, and we just, you know, we're scoring touchdowns, we're converting in the red zone, Derrick Henry's having a monster game, we're doing what we want in the passing game. But yeah, it's I've been looking at those Chiefs lines because they had that stretch there where I think they were, what, 2 in like 12 or something against the spread, and it feels like it's maybe evened out a little bit where you're getting some better numbers now, or maybe you know, early in the season this might have been a bigger line. So it feels like you're stealing when you get Mahomes in a game like this and it's under a touchdown. So I totally can see it.
Well, the hope is that if you're betting the Titans in this game, it's like a 35-31 type game. Like, the Titans are up 31-28, Mahomes, they score a touchdown in the fourth quarter, they win, but they don't win by more than 5.5. Right. And that's feasible to me. Like, if this is just a back-and-forth shootout and it ends up being within a touchdown, I wouldn't be surprised. But I think in order to do that, the Titans need to score a bunch of points.
And it's got to be one of those Titans drives where every drive is 7 plays, 8 plays, 6 plays, 10 plays. You know, they got to have that over and over. Or pop, you know, get the touchdowns on the first or second play like they do sometimes when Henry pops one. But that's the thing. It's a lot of ifs. But we'll see. We'll see on Sunday night when I'm going, that if, what didn't happen?
I can't wait until Henry's third 40-yard touchdown when you're just screaming into the abyss on your couch.
I liked on that one how Nate was really using his hands and you know, speaking very expressively when he got into that Chiefs picks. With that combined with the dog mask, I thought that was a nice touch, nice way to end it.
We are giving our social guys a lot to work with here.
I realized when you made your lukewarm block, I put my hand on my heads, and I was like, I was trying to figure out where to put them. I was like, I had them on my ears for a second.
All right, you can take that thing off. Oh. You are, like Nike Shield was a couple weeks ago, you are a good sport. This is, sincerely, guys, one of my favorite things we do every single week. I know I always say that, but it's true. It's a blast. I have a great time. It's a great note on which to start the weekend. Appreciate you guys doing it. Appreciate all of you guys for listening. Please rate and review the podcast. If you get some time to do that, it would mean a lot to me. Also, please subscribe to The Athletic, theathletic.com/football show. Tomorrow, on Saturday, please check out The Football GM with Mike Sando and Randy Mueller. It is a great show, tons of great insights. You guys will not regret that. Nate and I will be back on Sunday night to recap all things week 7. Until then, enjoy your guys' weekend. Talk to you soon.
Hey, football fans, this is Diana Rossini from The Athletic. Get the top stories in pro football snapped directly to your inbox with our latest NFL newsletter, Scoop City. Jacob Robinson and I will bring you the daily scoop of top NFL articles, posts, and podcasts every Monday to Friday. Sign up for free now at theathletic.com/scoop.